Good evening. The coronavirus spreads, increasing concerns of a worldwide epidemic. Financial markets take the biggest hit in more than a decade, and African-American activists say no to Mike Bloomberg. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with some of the news for Thursday, February 27th, 2020. The World Health Organization said on Thursday that no country should make the fatal mistake of assuming it will be spared the coronavirus, as governments from Iran to Australia are racing to contain the epidemic's rapid global spread. The director of WHO is Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. He says the health crisis has reached a crucial point.
Our message continues to be that this virus has pandemic potential, and WHO is providing the tools to help every country to prepare accordingly. This is not a time for fear. This is a time for taking action now to prevent infections and save lives now.
Nations have been scrambling to react. In Japan, all high schools remain closed. Pilgrims have been banned from holy sites in Saudi Arabia. France recently cut its health budget. And staff members of one Paris hospital begged President Emmanuel Macron to come up with more money to fight the outbreak. In the United States, an infection was confirmed in California in a person who reportedly had no exposure to anyone with the virus, stoking fears of an unknown path for the infection. And Wall Street's main indexes tumbled for the sixth straight session on Thursday. In the biggest drop yet this week, the market fell 4.4% by the closing bell, the benchmark Dow index falling almost 1,200 points. It was the biggest sell-off since the market crashed in 2008. Meanwhile, companies with the biggest drops on Wall Street today were among airlines, as nations have imposed travel restrictions and outright travel bans to try and contain the flu-like disease. In related news, the market slide in spreading coronavirus is projected to have a political impact. Investment giant Goldman Sachs is warning Wall Street that the coronavirus could cost President Donald Trump the election. An analyst for the firm wrote in a report published last night, if the coronavirus epidemic materially affects U.S. economic growth, it may increase the likelihood of Democratic victory in the 2020 election. Economists are warning that the coronavirus could spark an imminent economic slowdown or even recession. Trump's point man on the virus is Vice President Mike Pence, who on Thursday vowed the administration is preparing to confront the health crisis while also declaring this is not the time for partisanship. On Wednesday, Trump contradicted the CDC, warning on the spread of coronavirus in this country, even as he promised the U.S. has the best people to handle the crisis.
The CDC said yesterday that they believe it's inevitable that the virus will spread in the United States, and it's not a question of if, but when. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I don't think it's inevitable. It probably will. It possibly will. It could be at a very small level, or it could be at a larger level. Whatever happens, we're totally prepared. We have the best people in the world. You see that from the study. We have the best prepared people, the best people in the world. Congress is willing to give us much more than we're even asking for. That's nice for a change. But we are totally ready, willing, and able. It's a term that we use. It's ready, willing, and able. It's going to be very well under control. Now, it may get bigger, it may get a little bigger, it may not get bigger at all. We'll see what happens. But regardless of what happens, we're totally prepared. Please.
You talked a little earlier about the screening measures that you put in place and the travel restrictions you put in place regarding China. At this point, as the virus spreads in Italy and South Korea, are you planning on adding those countries?
Well, just so you understand, you know, I'm the president of the United States. I'm not the president of other countries. Other countries, some are on the list that are very respected in what they do in terms of what we're talking about. But I really want to be responsible for this country if it means placing a very strong situation on the border so people can't come into our country from a country that is infected. We're doing that, and we've already done it.
Can you clarify, are you considering restricting travel to and from South Korea, Italy, and other countries that have been affected?
At a right time, we may do that. Right now, it's not the right time, but at a right time. And we are checking people as they come through, specifically for the problem that we're dealing with. So we're checking a lot of people if they're coming from South Korea. Has been hit pretty hard. Italy's been hit pretty hard. China is obvious what's happened in China.
Last summer, Trump claimed a hurricane was going to hit Alabama, even as his own Hurricane Bureau said it would not. The confusion led to charges that Trump had pressured government scientists to not contradict his false assertions. In London, it was day four of Julian Assange's extradition hearing. The proceedings saw lawyers discussing whether international law supersedes English law. At one dramatic point, the judge rejected a request for Assange to be allowed to sit with his lawyers. Judge Vanessa Baratzer refused the request to allow Assange to leave a glass box, but she did grant him headphones to listen to legal arguments. During the hearing, prosecutors argued English law had no protection against extradition for political offenses. The defense argues sending Assange back to the United States would violate a slew of treaties and international law. He faces more than a century in prison if convicted of espionage in the United States. Outside the court, WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Kristen Hrafnsson joined Assange's father, John Shipton, in decrying the trial is based on U.S. lies.
The judge is being told is that you are being misled in the request for extradition from the United States. And that is true. That is true. Will be shown by counts of witnesses. And it's, as the barrister explained this morning, it can be basically established by material that is available to everyone and everybody, and it certainly has been available to the Americans who are seeking this extradition. Now, what also was talked about this morning is the horrendous treatment of Julian yesterday, a treatment that is unacceptable and surely must contravene all human rights convention. An innocent man on remand, twice strip search yesterday. Remember, he's traveling from Belmarsh prison through an underground tunnel to this court. Strip searched twice. Handcuffed 11 times. And what, beside that humiliation and unnecessary action of this nature, when he returned to the prison just around the corner, all material was taken away from him, the legal material that he was using here in the court and in this proceeding. That is very serious. I want to give you the word to John Shipton, his father now.
The insults to person that have been outlined by Nils Melzer in the United Nations Rapporteur on Torture report, the insults to person continue. Yesterday, Julian strip searched for no reason we can understand, put in five different holding cells, handcuffed 9 times, and his court papers removed from his person. If you can bring that to the attention, that insult to person that continues unabated for year after year to Julian Assange, who actually is an innocent man. He's on remand here. He ought not to be in a prison. He's 48 years old. He's got children, brothers, sisters, family that live here. He's committed no offence and ought to be out on bail. The last thing is that when the barrister Mark Summers stood up to begin his address, he began the address by saying, lies, lies, lies. Lies, lies, lies. That is what characterizes the entire extradition request. Lies. It demonstrates over the next couple of days what actually happened.
WikiLeaks famously released thousands of secret documents, including emails that purported to show that the Democratic Party was heavily engaged in trying to short-circuit the 2016 presidential campaign of Senator Bernie Sanders. The leak has been attributed to Russian government hackers interfering in the U.S. election. The Russian government has long denied involvement in the leak. The House of Representatives overwhelmingly passed a law today making the act of lynching a federal crime for the first time in history. The Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act passed 410-4, with four congresspeople voting no and 16 not voting at all. The bill was introduced by Illinois Democrat Bobby Rush.
In passing this bill today, we send a resoundingly strong message, a message about what we are as a nation, our country's values, and more importantly, what we as Americans stand for and what we will tolerate and what we will not tolerate. Today, Madam Speaker, we send a strong message that violence and race-based violence in particular has no place in American society.
Previous attempts by Congress to pass similar legislation have failed repeatedly since 1900. Between 1877 and 1950, the Equal Justice Initiative estimates that more than 4,000 black people were lynched in a dozen states: Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Virginia. Emmett Till was murdered by white racists in Mississippi for allegedly whistling at a white woman. It took a local jury barely over an hour to return a not guilty verdict against the alleged perpetrators. Famously, Till's mother held an open casket funeral showing the disfigured corpse of the 14-year-old. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In election news, Bernie Sanders will swing through North Carolina, Virginia, and Massachusetts in the coming days. Elizabeth Warren will make stops in Texas and Arkansas. Amy Klobuchar will be in Tennessee and Virginia. The South Carolina primary is just 2 days away, but the race is quickly going national as candidates pivot to the 14 states that vote on Super Tuesday. The interest in a recognition of Joe Biden's strength in South Carolina, with most of the focus on the margin of his victory and who might come in second place. But it's also an effort to tap into the hundreds of delegates at stake in the Super Tuesday contest. About a third of delegates needed to secure the Democratic nomination will be on the table. Meanwhile, New York billionaire Mike Bloomberg has sought to bypass the traditional early voting states, including South Carolina, to focus exclusively on the Super Tuesday states. Bloomberg will be in Oklahoma, Arkansas, Tennessee, and North Carolina, all Super Tuesday states, over the next several days. But at the Times Square Bloomberg headquarters today, the former three-term mayor was the target of public advocate Jumaane Williams. He says Bloomberg's use of stop and frisk against black people during his tenure was just one of many insults that should disqualify the billionaire from the presidency.
It's saying that he wants to do for the country what he did for New York City. Well, we say, please no. We do not want to see an extension of Bloomberg policies from New York City going and spread toward this country. Of all the people who are running, he is the least best person to run for president of the United States of America. And this argument about he's the only one who can beat Donald Trump is just simply not true. I heard that about 4 years ago, all the way until Donald Trump won. And Mike Bloomberg is slightly better in degree than Donald Trump, but so is George W. Bush. And I don't think any of us would want to support George W. Bush. Mike Bloomberg's legacy, most people know about the abuses of stop, question, and frisk, where he stopped 1 year more young black men than lived in the city of New York. He stopped them two or three times. And he did not just altruistically lower the stops. Those of us behind me and many people had to be in the streets intensely. Mike Bloomberg vetoed mine and Brad Lander's bills. We had to override his veto. simply to try to end the abuses of the unconstitutional stops. I wish that stop and frisk was the only failed policy of Mike Bloomberg. He defended that policy, however, until 2019, until about a week before he ran for president. We have yet to hear his apology for his housing and homelessness policies. Homelessness went up exponentially under Mike Bloomberg as a direct result of him cutting programs like the Advantage program, like cutting and stop accepting Section 8, his direct housing policies, or the reason that homelessness skyrocketed, or the reason that we see black folks in a reverse migration back down south. His rezonings were atrocious when it comes to the city of New York. We do not want those policies across the nation. His education policies helped make this the most segregated educational system in the entire country. You look at things like gifted and talented before Mike Bloomberg and after Mike Bloomberg. He was an enemy to working class people. He was an enemy to unions. He lied about his relationship with the teachers of this city in the debate. I need to remind people, he left every single municipal employee, including teachers, without a contract. That's his version of balancing a budget. That's the Mike Bloomberg that people know here. We also have to remind people how he treated and mistreated protesters, whether they were protesting the Republican National Convention or Occupy Wall Street, where he came in and removed them violently. Not just violently, he prevented anyone from the media and elected officials from observing what was going on. I was one of those elected officials who just recently settled a lawsuit with the city because he prevented us from moving in. I was with my, going in and observing. I was with my colleague, Yudanis Rodriguez, who was thrown to the floor and was bleeding that night. That's the Mike Bloomberg that we know and remember. Mike Bloomberg, who endorsed George W. Bush for re-election. Mike Bloomberg, who spent millions of dollars to get Republicans re-elected. That's the Mike Bloomberg that we know, that is different than the ads he is putting out. And we're asking anyone who's watching, don't be suckered by those ads. I'm so disappointed to see anyone endorsing this man, particularly black leaders in New York, who are proving two things. It's either one or two or a combination. People can be bought. That's what's happening here in a lot of places. And the second is also egregious. We are showing that once we needed to make sure there was representation. But now we are just showing we want to replicate a system that is harming people. From Brooklyn to Buffalo, black, brown, and working class people are fighting the same fights they were fighting 10, 20, 30 years ago because some of these black leaders, it's sad because I look up to some of them, but they are simply trying to replicate a system that doesn't work and they are afraid of some of the other people who are there. And I want to make sure that we're clear that not everyone here is supporting the same candidate.
That's right.
But we are united that the worst person is Mike Bloomberg. And lastly, Mike Bloomberg was mayor and spent $6 million fighting the Exonerated Five, formerly the Central Park Five, fighting them tooth and nail what they deserve to get from this city. Mike Bloomberg said that at the time those young men were sent to jail, there was enough evidence. They had enough to move forward, even after they were exonerated. When Mike Bloomberg was asked just a few months ago about his opinion, he said he has none. That is the Mike Bloomberg who is trying to make people think that he sincerely cared about black and brown and working class people when he was mayor of this city. There's a 12-year legacy that we're still trying to climb out of.
Public advocate Jumaane Williams. Among the supporters in New York of Mayor Bloomberg's presidential hopes are former Mayor David Dinkins, New York's first African-American mayor, and Crystal Stokes, daughter of Newark's first African-American mayor. Besides being a longtime champion of the odious stop-and-frisk policy, Bloomberg played a major role in blocking a settlement in lawsuits brought by members of the Central Park Five, known now as the Exonerated Five, despite the confessions of a convicted rapist that led to a judge to throw out their convictions. Police barred the men, teenagers at the time, from their families and lawyers while subjecting them to withering interrogation about the rape of a jogger in Central Park, extracting confessions that were eventually thrown out as coerced. One of the Exonerated Five, Kevin Richard, was there today. Kevin Richardson was there today.
And supporting my family and my brothers, Raymond Santana, Yusuf Salam, Antro McCray, and Corey Wise. It hits me home because I'm directly connected to Michael Bloomberg. Hmm. Because of him, he tried to stop the growth of my family and people that love us. It was a 12-year span that he carried for us not getting our lawsuit. And it wasn't about the lawsuit. It was about getting our life back. Because at the end of the day, no amount of money could equal to what we endured. Yes, sir. So we're here to support and let people know. Don't let these ads get to you. Don't be bamboozled by this. We know personally who Michael Bloomberg is. And now I'm here to step forward and let you know it's time to vote. It's time for our voices to be heard. When I was incarcerated, I lost that. I lost that privilege. So now we must exercise that privilege and vote for people that we might agree with. Like Jemani said, we all might vote for a different candidate, but I'm sure we'll be better than Michael Bloomberg. So please, if anyone that's listening, let's each one teach one. Let's represent. Thank you so much.
Kevin Richardson is one of the Exonerated Five. And feminist leader, member of Black Lives Matter, and gun control proponent Tamika Mallory made an impassioned plea on behalf of African-American people who felt the sting of Bloomberg's policing policies.
When people do not feel that their vote is really going to count, they don't always participate. And so when that happens, because either the Democratic Party or people who have influence, power, and money decide to ignore the will of the people, do not turn around and blame us. We are here to inform you that it is a bad decision to try to force Michael Bloomberg down the throats of Americans because we know that he is not good for our digestive systems.
That's right.
We cannot and will not be silent. I've had many people that I love and respect call me and say I'm wrong for speaking out, that we need to beat Donald Trump, and that this election is just about beating Donald Trump. I want to say to all of you, my friends and family and people who I love, people who are having a hard time accepting this, the folks that I work with on the ground, they don't care who the president is at this point, because in their minds and hearts, no matter what happens, they are still going to be poor, going to be marginalized, and going to be harmed. The only way that they will invest in a presidential election is if they feel that it is an election that is fair and that there are candidates that are being put forward who are going to really do something for them, and people that they can hear are not tone deaf to their issues. So when you tell them that a man apologized after traumatizing so many people, 5 million people in the city of New York, black men, black children, when you tell them that he apologized and therefore we should promote him to a higher position, that we should reward him for what he did to our people, they are also tone deaf and turned off.
Activist Tamika Mallory at Bloomberg for President headquarters in Midtown earlier today.
Next, we'll hear from one of the organizations who have always been on the forefront and on the ground fighting these issues, someone from New York Community for Change.
Wow, that's a hard one to follow. I feel like everything that NYCC stands for has already been said by Tamika and by Jemani. We are an organization that's in the front lines of fighting for working class folks, for primarily in low-income communities of color. And when we heard about Mike Bloomberg spending what so far has been almost over $500 million to buy his way into the presidency, our first thought was, we remember what it was like to live under Mike Bloomberg for 12 years in this city, and whatever happened to a democracy where you have a normal election process and where the playing field is fair. Right now, Mike Bloomberg is literally buying off employees from other campaigns because he can pay them more money. Mike Bloomberg is blitzing, is saturating television screens of voters across the country because he has so much more money. But he does not have the support of the people on the ground. And we are here to say no to billionaire bought elections. We are here to say no to a mayor that turned New York into a playground for rich people, right, where, you know, we're so scared to raise taxes on the rich because, God forbid, the rich are going to leave New York City. But the reality is that poor and low income folks are leaving New York City because nobody can afford to live here anymore.
That's right.
And that's not the city that we stand for. That's not the city that any thriving community can survive in. So we are also organizing a march that says Never Bloomberg this Saturday. We were galvanizing communities from all across the city, from police accountability folks to our Muslim brothers and sisters that were surveilled under Mike Bloomberg, to people that have been in the forefronts of the fighting for housing justice, that saw our people being kicked out consistently to farther and farther outside of New York. So we're gathering a coalition, and the one thing that Mike Bloomberg says is that he's the Democrat that can unite the Democratic Party, and we are saying, yes, you have united the Democratic Party and New York City against you. And that's what we're going to be showing this Saturday at 5, and we'll be marching to Bloomberg's mansion. And thank you all for coming.
Thank you. That's a fact. Yes, he was a Republican. I just want to thank Yandy Smith and Janos Martin, who's a DA candidate, for joining us. The last person to close us out is my son, who a hip-hop artist, always on the ground with us when we need to make sure that we're keeping the pressure on. So let's hear from my son.
I'm going to make this very brief. And I want to caution the Democratic Party that this is the election where you can lose all of us.
Yeah.
Because we're not stupid. You're not going to trick us. We know who we want. We know who Michael Bloomberg is. Those commercials, the person he tried to tell you is, that's not who he is.
Yeah.
Us, the citizens of New York, we know exactly who Michael Bloomberg is. And a lot of these young boys who have went from a stop and frisk to becoming hardcore criminals know exactly who Michael Bloomberg is. He created criminality inside of this New York City for these young kids. When you throw young black boys against the wall for walking down the block, and then you put them in cells with hardcore criminals, they become that. Michael Bloomberg created crime in New York City. He didn't clean up anything. So we're going to caution you, and we want to let you know that these black faces that you're paying off, they don't speak for us. They don't speak for us. We don't care how much money you got and how many high-profile blacks you put in there to tell them that they speak for us, but they don't. So we're going to caution you one more time. Either you're going to get it together or you're going to lose us.
That's right. Caution the Democratic Party, who is trying to keep a system in place that harms everybody. And that's why you see Michael Bloomberg being pushed. But up there in his campaign office, they are generating more ads, generating more lies, trying to buy more people. And we're going to do whatever we can to make sure the true legacy of Michael Bloomberg is understood in this state and across the country. We do not want a Mike Bloomberg country. Believe me, that's not what we want. That's not what we need. He had 12 years, like he likes to say. By the way, he stole one of those 12 years, one of those terms. He reversed the will of the people to get a third term. Even, and he shows how hypocritical he is, even when the former mayor tried to do that after 9/11, Mike Bloomberg said, no, a mayor should not get a third term, even after 9/11. He turned around and gave himself a third term. These are people of the same pod. Please believe me. Better by degree, but of the same pod. We say no to Michael Bloomberg.
No to Michael Bloomberg.
No to Michael Bloomberg. And
I just want to say one more thing.
And then we'll take any questions.
I just wanted to say that, you know, a lot of folks have talked about Elizabeth Warren and her statement during the debate, the first debate that Michael Bloomberg participated in, where she talked about the drip, drip, drip of sexual assault incidents that we may hear about over the next 6 months. And I want to make sure that people know that that same drip is also going to take place with families and people who will be coming out to tell stories about the trauma that they have experienced. We don't want a drip, drip, drip problem that is like the one that's already in the White House.
Yeah.
And how can we as women hold Donald Trump accountable and not hold Michael Bloomberg to the same standards when we have women telling us about the horror that they experience working within his company? I think that is something that we have to be very careful about. We cannot say that we support the Me Too movement and not support Me Too when it comes to Michael Bloomberg.
Before the question, I just want to get some video of us saying no Mike Bloomberg really quick. So, no Mike Bloomberg.
No Mike Bloomberg.
Thank you. And if folks have any questions, we're happy to answer. Look, I heard this, we have to have a candidate who could beat Donald Trump last time. Now we have Donald Trump. So that does not work. The polls show that there are other people who can beat Mike Bloomberg. I happen to support one of them. But this is not what this is about. There's a whole litany of people that people can support that is not Mike Bloomberg. He is not the answer to Donald Trump. He is not the answer to Donald Trump. He is better by degree, but so is anybody else, including George W. Bush. And I tell you right now, George W. Bush is not the answer to Donald Trump. Mike Bloomberg might have the effect of suppressing people from coming out to vote. We don't want to make the same mistakes we made 4 years ago. I'm hearing the same damn things that we heard 4 years ago. The DNC is afraid of breaking up a system that benefits a very few people. That's why they're afraid of Bernie Sanders. That's why they're afraid of Elizabeth Warren. But we're not going to stand here and allow this to happen. This system needs to be broken up. As a matter of fact, this is not what this is about, but there are many Democrats who are the reason why we have Donald Trump right now, who paved the way for that man to be here. And they're the ones who want to see Mike Bloomberg be here.
Anyone.
I say anybody but Mike Bloomberg.
But Mike Bloomberg.
I'm not a particular Biden fan, I'll say that.
Can you elaborate what you meant when you said Bloomberg has bought the support of some Black
leaders? Look, there are only two reasons that I understand why people are supporting Mike Bloomberg. Because his money is very, very long, and there's no way that we can deny that people are being their eyes are being dazzled by the money. I can't say for everyone, I don't know. And some of these Black leaders I really look up to, so I'm embarrassed and hurt to see that happen. But I know money is a part of it. And another part that is just as real is some of the Black leaders simply want to maintain a system that helps very few. And so there are those of us who got elected because we wanted to see representation that we haven't seen before. But instead of trying to dismantle a system, we became a system. And we said, you know what, we want to make sure that it's us and our friends that have these jobs. But the masses of people from Brooklyn to Buffalo are still dealing with the same issues that they're dealing with before they came in, exactly because of things like supporting Michael Bloomberg.
There's opportunism of
others. I will definitely single out leaders who support a person that has a consistent and persistent history of Mike Bloomberg, of hurting the people that they are supposed to be representing. That is two entirely different things. I will talk about the problems on both sides, have no issue doing that, but there is one person here, one, who has a history of hurting Black and brown people, who has a history of working and fighting against working class people, who has a history of not standing up for these folks, and that is Mike Bloomberg. So if you're going to play this game for Mike Bloomberg, then you should be called out for that.
And by the way, we are not one-sided. We also helped to get Bill de Blasio out of the run for presidency as well.
That's so true, too. Many of us spoke out against him as well. But playing the game for this dude it's hurtful to see it happen, particularly for people who are here, who know what happened. And he hasn't apologized for everything.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm not going to call any names. I'm going to call it as a whole.
all of the people who are supporting Mike Bloomberg across this country, especially black leaders who are from New York City. They should really be ashamed. And I'm embarrassed for them, and I'm really hurt. And I want to be careful in how I speak, because we're going to have to get through this together on the other side. But folks have to be called out for it. Peace, everybody.
Thank you.
No Mike Bloomberg. Thank
no
you.
No Mike Bloomberg.
Well, he apologized for one of his policies, and he apologized a few days before he ran for president. That doesn't sound like a sincere apology.
And if you're all wondering whether he can beat Trump, have you seen the last two debates? I think that tells you everything.
And Mike Bloomberg's candidacy is carrying a lot of baggage in the form of insensitive and sexist comments by the media mogul. He's been accused of calling his women employees fat broads and horse-faced lesbians, telling pregnant women to kill it, and has settled dozens of lawsuits for sexual harassment and discrimination from women whom he still keeps silent under non-disclosure agreements. He's long opposed raising the minimum wage, but in favor of cutting Social Security and Medicare, and has opposed laws against redlining. But Bloomberg is just one of many billionaires trying to live in the White House, including the current occupant. The director of the Inequalities Program at the Institute for Policy Studies is Chuck Collins. He says billionaires have too much power to be allowed to run for president using their personal fortunes.
Billionaires just have too much wealth and power in a democratic society. So they just have too much power when it comes to running for office, shaping the conversation, the way that Bloomberg has used his philanthropy to kind of lay the groundwork for a political campaign. All those things are troubling. You know, we've had wealthy presidents in the past. I mean, people would say FDR was a great president. He was wealthy. So it doesn't inherently disqualify anybody, but it makes us, we should be very concerned and skeptical when people have that level of wealth in a democratic society.
Are we seeing something different now with this era of Trump and Steyer and Bloomberg, all these billionaires getting into the race and trying to buy it?
We are in a new era of concentrated wealth and power. It's the second Gilded Age. You have kind of plutocrats who have money in our political system. They can buy a huge amount of advertising. They can buy their way onto the debate stage. They can by organizers and campaigners, and they just have too much power and influence. So I think we're entering into a new period of this is what plutocracy looks like, when every billionaire thinks they too can become president.
Do you think he was a billionaire who bought the presidency, Trump? Because some people are saying he's not even really a billionaire. It's also a time when frauds can get up there and claim to be billionaires.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that Donald Trump started life with a $400 million head start from his father. It's not clear that he's actually amassed much more wealth. He has, you know, we don't know his tax returns. We know he's probably incredibly in debt. So he's a little bit of a fraud. Some people point out that if he'd taken the money he'd inherited from his father and just put it in a bank account, he'd have more money than he has today. That discredits the idea that he somehow, by virtue of his acumen, amassed more money. It's just maybe not the case. So it does make us more vulnerable to the hucksters who are also running.
Relatively sane people who are for some reason pro-Trump or sympathetic to Trump, as they think in some way he's a rebel, all look at his alleged wealth as a sign of his abilities.
We live in a culture that equates wealth with virtue. But it's a mistake, I mean, to think that way, because a lot of these great fortunes come about because people have gotten a monopoly, or they've exploited their workers, or they've exploited natural resources. Voltaire said behind every fortune is a crime. And I think we need to bring that kind of skepticism when we see great masses of wealth, especially when they want to exercise political power.
What's the answer to this in an economy like the United States, in a culture like this, where, as you said yourself, wealth is a romantic thing? How are you ever going to keep these people out?
We need to have a publicly financed election system where the non-rich can run for office and compete against big money. We need to have a much more progressive tax system that keeps billionaire fortunes from growing the way they are. Now there's like a professional wealth defense industry that works to help the rich get richer and stay rich. And so we're seeing dynasties emerge. So we have to put in place policies, tax policies, and things that protect democracy from concentrated wealth.
Publicly financed elections.
That's right. Maine has it. It fundamentally changes who's able to run for office, what voices get into the conversation, and who gets elected. And until we do that, we're going to just see more and more billionaire candidates for office.
How about the people's role in this? It's supposed to be a democracy. How do they wake up? What do we do to wake them up to what's going on and that they should change the way they choose their leaders, maybe?
We should be offended when people try to buy elections. We should be organizing to defend our community. It's essentially people are stealing our votes and our voices when they allow money to talk and money to dominate. So I think we should each take offense, and we should work for candidates who are focused on reforming and transforming that system so money doesn't dominate.
Chuck Collins is director of the Inequalities Program at the Institute for Policy Studies. And besides Super Tuesday, another important primary is scheduled for this Saturday in South Carolina. The pundits have been nearly unanimous in opining that former Vice President Joe Biden has a lock on the state's delegates. The reasoning rests on the state's large African-American population and devotion to former President Barack Obama, under whom Biden served. But former Rainbow Coalition organizer Kevin Gray, who was Jesse Jackson's South Carolina campaign manager in 1988, says the claim that Biden is more electable than the other candidates in the face of Trump is false.
Jim Clyburn and Democratic Party establishment like things quiet, and they want to maintain the status quo, and they keep wanting to have this argument about electability in the face of candidates like Hubert Humphrey and Walter Mondale and Mike Dukakis and Al Gore and John Kerry and Hillary Clinton, all who were electable. The majority of electable candidates with the Democratic Party have not won. With Joe Biden, the myth-making around him, the myth-making that he has some kind of a race record or a positive race record is just nonsense. But Bernie Sanders, like Jesse Jackson, represents change and a threat to the status quo, and so they're fighting against that. Stiers is doing campaigning the old-fashioned way, too. The piece I wrote kind of referenced both of them. I mean, no question Bernie is the progressive in the race. One would have hoped that Elizabeth Warren was going to be a progressive or a progressive would mount a challenge. But I think her use of the Me Too card has turned people off a lot. So, that's, I think, what's driving the election. Stiers' money, the network that Sanders has built over the last 4 years, much like Jesse Jackson did between 84 and 88. And then Biden with the Yellow Dog Democrats and the Democratic establishment wanting to maintain the status quo.
Now you have Bloomberg in there. Now he's not going to be in South Carolina, but he's resting everything on these.
On a contested convention. He's resting everything on having a contested convention. He's buying out a lot of people, and he's buying into a lot of black institutions, which is why a lot of people are quiet. I wouldn't be surprised if you went down the list of national black organizations and looked at their financial filings. You'll see Bloomberg's money somewhere there. But I don't know if that's going to make the difference. Stop and frisk and racial profiling, that falls in line with Jim Crow and slavery. And I think black people have a visceral reaction to someone that promoted it. And this idea that you just want to ask forgiveness after you've wrecked so many people's lives, but it doesn't work that way.
A brokered convention. Do you see that, and what form would that take?
I don't quite know what that's going to look like. I mean, the word is that if Bernie doesn't have enough, he has the majority of the delegates, but not enough delegates to secure the nomination, then many of the superdelegates, which are still controlled by the party establishment, are not going to support him. Now, if they do that and up in that convention and don't come to some kind of consensus on Sanders, if he does have the majority of delegates, then they're not going to win anyway. They'll have a fraction party, and it might even lead to the resurrection of the third party movement.
Do you think the establishment is capable of throwing in the towel and letting Trump win just to stop Bernie?
Sure. What do they lose with Trump in office? They don't lose. They really don't lose power. They're still in place. They still have power over the organizations and institutions they have. I haven't publicly endorsed anybody, and I don't plan to. 4 years ago, I was not supportive of Bernie Sanders. But if you ask me about who's the most progressive candidate in the race right now, it's Bernie Sanders. And if I vote my politics, I'll probably end up voting for Bernie Sanders. I lean toward Elizabeth Warren. But since the Nevada debate and this Wednesday in Charleston and the fact that she hasn't really organized in South Carolina leads me to think that maybe I need to be looking to place my vote someplace else. But, I had hoped in my lifetime to see a woman leading this country in the White House. But that doesn't look that is going to happen.
What is Bernie's attraction? How is he,
It's not Bernie. It's not. And see, I said, I managed Jesse Jackson's campaign, and I worked in the 84 campaign as a field rep, and I worked with Jesse since 78 on and off. And he's been back and forth to my restaurant I'm opening down here.
What's the name of your restaurant? Just sorry.
Railroad Barbecue. It's right by the railroad track, brother. Ain't nothing more southern than railroad track and barbecue. Bernie represents an extension of the progressive movement that's lineage runs, I think, from Eugene Debs to Shirley Chisholm to Jesse Jackson. The contemporary lineage is directly from Jesse Jackson's 88 campaigns and what they represented to Sanders. That's why folk can't get a handle on it. They fought Jesse. That's the DLC was created to try to thwart the efforts of the Rainbow Coalition. So the same thing is happening with Sanders because he's pushing the party to the left, and the country needs to go to the left. They're fighting that. They don't really want democracy. They want to control it. And they've always wanted to control it. The Clintons have always wanted to control it. And they've had their time in the sun pushing the Democratic Party back to the right. It's time out for them to be governing the politics of a new generation.
Kevin Gray was Jesse Jackson's South Carolina campaign manager in 1988. And finally, closer to home, a New York State Supreme Court justice ruled in favor of community lawsuit to stop the construction of four luxury towers in the Two Bridges neighborhood on Monday. In another surprise move, the judge officially nullified the project's approvals that had been granted by the City Planning Commission. Judge Arthur Engeren ruled that the city did not make the required findings under the zoning laws. Plaintiffs on the suit, known as an Article 78, included Chinese Staff and Workers Association, Youth Against Displacement, and National Mobilization Against Sweatshops. They were represented by the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund. The project consists of three buildings with four towers, a standalone 80-story tower, a 70-story tower, and a 63-story tower sharing a base, and a standalone 63-story tower. Taken together, they would add roughly 2.5 million square feet of new space and 2,700 new apartments to the Two Bridges area. At the start of this fight, Councilmember Chin and Mayor de Blasio told us it was a done deal, said Zixun Ning, a member of the Lower East Side Organized Neighbors. We would not be more excited to prove them wrong. We didn't listen to the politicians whose pockets are lined with real estate money. We came together and demanded no towers, no compromise. And through our work, our organizing, and our unity, we have stopped these towers and the massive displacement they would have brought to our community. And that's some of the news for Thursday, February 27th, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. It was engineered by Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.